And welcome to KHEN LP 106.9 Salida. And this is Truth Quest with Melody. And we're streamed on khen.org. And all the programs are archived at www.gimmesometruth.info. And this evening I have another fine guest lined up. And she has several videos on the internet, but I want to say it's Rosa Corey, and she's a forensic commercial real estate appraiser specializing in eminent domain valuation. Her 28-year career as an expert witness on land use has culminated in exposing the impacts of sustainable development on private property rights and individual liberty. In 2005, she was elected to a Citizens Oversight Committee in Santa Rosa, Northern California, to review a proposed 1,300-acre redevelopment project in which 10,000 people live and work. Her research into the documents justifying the plans led her, with her partner Kay Tuckerud, to challenge the fraudulent basis for the huge Gateways redevelopment project. The city, in an attempt to block Corey from exposing the project, removed the neighborhood in which Corey and Tuckerud's properties were located from the redevelopment area. And Corey and Tuckerud fought on. However, not wanting to abandon the thousands of business and property owners still in the area, they formed a Business and Property Owners Association and a nonprofit organization, Concerned Citizens of Santa Rosa Against Redevelopment Law Abuse, and were able to raise nearly $500,000 in donations and pro bono legal work to sue the city of Santa Rosa to stop the project. The court case Tuckerud and City of Santa Rosa lost in Superior Court, but the court ruled that they could continue, and they appealed to the San Francisco First District Court of Appeals, where they lost again in 2009. The 3 years of litigation fighting eminent domain and redevelopment projects succeeded in delaying the project while the economy collapsed. The city has failed to implement its plans, but still has the power of eminent domain over the 1,100 acres area until 2018. Over the course of the legal challenge, Corey became aware of the source of the planning revolution she had observed over more than 10 years, UN Agenda 21. Through her research, she found that much of the funding to implement local UN Agenda 21 sustainable development land use programs comes through the diversion of property taxes to redevelopment agencies. Her work in providing information and solutions for communities fighting UN Agenda 21 has spread across the nation as more and more people become aware of the increased restrictions on their property rights and the methods used to implement social engineering. Through her website, DemocratsAgainstUNAgenda21.com, and her grassroots tactical organization, Santa Rosa Neighborhood Coalition, she and other community leaders has enabled activists on many seemingly unconnected issues to come together and fight the source, UN Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. In 2010, the nonprofit organization she and her partner founded was expanded in scope and renamed the Sustainability Institute. Rosa speaks nationally on UN Agenda 21, blogs regularly on the Democrats' website, and is the author of Behind the Green Mask, UN Agenda 21. So welcome, Rosa.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
Well, I'm very happy to have you. You do some great presentations that are posted on YouTube, and I'm sure there's other areas that you can get some of those talks. But I think you do a great job of getting across the pitfalls of where we're headed with this Agenda 21.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, in fact, it's not, unfortunately, it's not so much where we're headed, it's where we are.
Right.
Because
right.
United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development is in every city, every county, and every state of the United States right now.
Right. So do you want to tell us, is there anything more that you want to add to how this all came about and why you got involved? Because, I mean, you come from a great background to be able to speak on this subject, because you've been in and around where this has been affecting the people. So, and I don't think there's a lot of people that have that ability to have that kind of viewpoint, right?
Well, it's interesting because, of course, there are, you know, I happen to be a commercial appraiser, and my specialty is eminent domain valuation. And so, you know, I'm interested in appraising property that's actually going to be acquired by a government agency for a freeway, usually. But my job is to value that property at the highest price the market will pay. That's the law. And so when I was going into planning departments all over the 9-county San Francisco Bay Area, and they weren't able to tell me what a property owner could do with their property by right, that, in fact, it seemed as if there wasn't anything that a property owner could do by right, and that means that they could just go in and get an over-the-counter permit to do anything, you know, that was permitted under their zoning. That was no longer possible, and I found that out. That's been about 10 years ago, and I was looking around like, hey, you know, doesn't anybody else think there's something wrong with this? And in doing the research that, you know, I have to be prepared to testify in a court case on land use, so I was doing the research, and I was coming up against this in every county and in every city. And it was I've been doing this for almost 30 years. I saw something had really happened. But it wasn't until I got involved with a lawsuit to stop a redevelopment project, a huge one, here in my city, that I found United Nations Agenda 21, Sustainable Development. And, you know, everyone seems to think that they know what sustainable development is. You know, but if you ask 100 people, they're all going to give you 100 different answers. Most people don't know that it comes from the United Nations, that it is it's defined by and created by the United Nations. And the United States has signed on to United Nations Agenda 21, which was the agenda for the 21st century, in 1992. And we have agreed to implement it in the United States, and that's what we're seeing now. We're in the end game now. It's been over a 20-year period that it has been, you know, the process has been created to implement it here. And that's what we're experiencing now. And it is in all facets of our lives, including the National Defense Authorization Act and domestic spying. All of these different elements that seem not to be connected with land use, but in fact are totally connected with Agenda 21.
Well, it seems like they had to go after land use because that was the one thing that defined us differently than many other countries, correct? I mean,
well, yeah, private property ownership is, you know, is one of the underpinnings of our freedom because
right.
If we can, you know, you can, it's exactly why the United Nations is not in favor of it, because the UN in 1976 at the Habitat One, at their Habitat One summit, said that private property ownership is a means of acquiring wealth, and that in fact that created social inequity. And so private property ownership was not desirable, and in fact ownership by the public, public government ownership was more desirable, and that private property ownership was a threat to the world. And of course we're based on private property ownership because, you know, you come to this country, you can scrape together a little money, you buy a piece of land, you put something up there, you might sell it and get a little more money, or you might rent it out and get some income. You know, we are dependent on being able to use our land and to use it to create wealth. And when we say wealth, you know, I'm not talking about Bill Gates kind of wealth. I'm talking about, you know, lower middle class to middle class and through middle class into upper class. In other words, to be able to create that American dream that we're so dependent on here.
And a lot of those rights were attached to property, if I'm saying that correctly, I hope, because ultimately, go ahead.
Well, just one thing that's really important is that we are our own private property. Your body and your mind are your property. And this is something that, you know, when people think about private property rights, you know, in the United States, we are, under our Constitution, we're guaranteed the rights that we were born with, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But under, the philosophy of John Locke, which was used to found this country, that right also includes property, and you are your most vital and important private property.
Well, do you want to get into a little bit on how this was implemented and how we kind of just walked right into this without even, many of us, without even realizing what was happening and why it is so prevalent? And, I mean, there's things that are going on around us that are all Agenda 21, and we don't even realize that it may be not something we want to welcome as so much, but they make it sound like it is so wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny. Okay, so for people who might be listening to this and going, well, so what is it already? I want to know what it is. It sounds like Area 51 or Catch 22 or something like that, but it isn't a conspiracy theory. Agenda 21 is what it does. It's a plan. It is a blueprint for the world, and what it does is it actually inventories and controls all human beings, all water, all land, all animals, all plants, all minerals, and all means of production in the world. That's exactly what it is intended to do. It is the creation of a plan that is intended to produce so-called social equity by impoverishing populations and creating total dependency on government. That's what it is. It is a corporatocracy. It is, if you want to see what it looks like the EU, the European Union. And the reason that it's a concern to us is because in 1992, the United States signed on to this plan. And I'm going to let me just tell you how it came about. In 1987, the United Nations World Commission on Environment and Development defined sustainable development as development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their needs. Now, this was in response to a theory that the Earth was in a really serious situation and needed to be, something needed to be done. So, but my theory and many other people's theory is that this is actually a hijacking of the environmental movement, and it is a way to instate totalitarian control throughout the world. And so what happened then was that all that they needed to do then was say that, yes, what we were doing, our development was, in fact, compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And the United Nations told that commission to come back in 5 years with a plan for the 21st century. And that is what Agenda 21 is. It's why it's called Agenda 21. It's the action plan, the blueprint for imposing sustainable development on the world. It is the 21st century plan. That's why it's called Agenda 21, the agenda for the 21st century. It's an actual document. It's 300 pages long, 40 chapters, and it covers every aspect of our lives.
Now, wait a minute. Let me just add, was that the original one? Because the last time I looked, it was somewhere in the 1,200-page area.
Well, you're probably thinking of the Global Biodiversity Assessment book. Now, okay. That is about 1,140 pages. Okay. There are three elements that came after Agenda 21, and parts of them were ratified by the Congress of the United States. But the Biodiversity Treaty was not because, in fact, if you take a look at the map for that, which was created by Dr. Michael Kaufman, you'll see that the majority of the United States, nearly all of the United States, is, in fact, set aside for corridors and linkages for habitat. And so there's very, very little area in the United States that is set aside for human habitation, as they call it. Now, this wasn't formally ratified, but this is actually under implementation right now in the United States as the Wildlands Project. And you will see that, especially you're in Colorado.
Right.
That, you know, if you're in a rural, you know, many states, or especially the West, are, you know, a lot of the state is owned already by the federal or state government. And this is the plan with Agenda 21. It's split into two elements. One is smart growth, which deals with urban areas and concentrates people into as small an area as possible, as dense an area as possible, moves them out of the rural and suburban areas into city centers. And then the Wildlands Project is the is what happens out in the wild lands, where people have been removed out of those areas, and the lands are then designated as being either potential wildlife areas or designated wildlife areas in which no human beings can live.
Okay, now,
and this is underway right now.
Okay, and I'm speaking with Rosa Corey, and she is an expert on eminent domain, and you've been a forensic commercial real estate appraiser. And you also had another, is that in the scope of your current job, or are you still at that current job? So,
well, I've got about another 2 weeks. I'm retiring so that I am speaking all over the United States on this issue, and I've just decided that it's way more important for me to be alerting and assisting people in fighting Agenda 21, sustainable development. It's way more important than the work that I've been doing in my career for the last almost 30 years. So,
But it did put you right in the midst of what was going on in such a manner that you were able to see its ramifications, right?
That's right. Yes, because when you're working with land use all the time, and when, you know, as I have been, and I'm not like an individual developer, I'm not benefiting financially personally from going and developing a piece of land. Instead, I see hundreds and hundreds of different individuals who are unable to do anything with their property. And, can't develop it, can't use it. For instance, I appraised a 1,400-acre ranch in a rural, fairly rural county adjacent to an urban area, and the property owner was only able to put one house on it.
Wow.
One house on a 1,400-acre ranch. Now, he had children who wanted to be able to build a house on that land, you know, so that they could continue in their father's footsteps, and he had a couple of kids, and they didn't want to live in the same house. They wanted their own homes. I'm not talking about building like 1,400 houses on a 1,400-acre parcel. I'm talking about building four or five houses on 1,400 acres. You know how huge that is?
Right.
And also the problems with trying to be able to put a septic system on that. You know, we're talking about restrictions on land use that are so limiting that people are not able to find any value in the property that they own.
Well, when you were
that's just one element.
Okay, so when you were talking about the wildlands, that and that no people, I mean, because a lot of these people are given the impression that these wildland wilderness areas are areas that they can go under certain, you know, quiet use or you know, walk or horseback ride, and you're saying the ultimate goal is to get humans off it totally, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. You know, obviously, everybody wants, you know, I considered myself to be an environmentalist until fairly recently when I recognized that the environmental movement is being used. But, you know, everyone wants to preserve open space and enjoy the lands that, you know, that are undeveloped.
Right.
I don't have a problem with that. If the government wants that, though, they should buy it. They should pay for it. And what's happening is that people are losing the ability to use their land, but they are still owning it. And so they can't do anything with it. Then they end up losing it to the bank because they can't pay their, you know, they have no income for it. They can't, you know, they're not far. First of all, when you're talking about, say, conservation easements, which people are selling so that they can retain their land and hopefully continue to farm it for generations. Instead, what you're finding is that the development rights are purchased by land trusts, and then they own the right basically to come onto your property and observe how you're using it. So you lose your private property rights. You lose your privacy rights. And then if, let's say, you park a farm truck on your property because you want to load your cattle, and the land trust says that you can't park your truck on that location on your land, on your own land, they can cite you. And if you want to fight them in court, you end up, whether you win or lose, having to pay all of the legal costs. Things like this bankrupt people.
Okay, this has been happening. Is this why you're stating this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. Okay. I mean, because...
Yeah. And, you know, as a matter of fact, in my book, I talk about the universe. Let me see if I get this right. I have to look at my own book to see. But I believe it was the University of Wyoming and the state of Wyoming was sending out counselors. They were sending out financial advisors to work with property owners, elderly property owners, so that they could advise them on keeping their ranches. But in fact, what they were doing was actually designing these programs so that the ranchers would leave their land to the government or sell conservation easements to the government. And you know, what is the state doing coming out and meeting with you and your family without an invitation on estate planning? Why are they doing that? This is, you know, I'd like to kind of set this up a little bit more.
Okay, go ahead.
In case people haven't, you know, really kind of gotten the sense of how Agenda 21 works. You know, this, first of all, Agenda 21, it just sounds like something crazy, you know, like it just sounds ridiculous and it sounds like I'm making it up. But if you think about it as sustainable development, if that's a little bit more acceptable because you've heard that term, you'll never hear the term Agenda 21 used. But you will hear sustainable development. And so your government basically has taken on the implementation of sustainable development by signing the United Nations document in 1992. That was in Rio de Janeiro at the Earth Summit in 92. And 179 world leaders signed that, including George H.W. Bush. And the way that it was implemented, I'll just tell you, here's what's unsustainable. Some of the things that are unsustainable: single-family residences, appliances, air conditioning, meat eating, dams, and reservoirs. Tillage, in other words, stirring up the dirt to put seeds in it, releases carbon dioxide into the atmosphere and is therefore unsustainable. So when you're thinking about, you know, unsustainability, we're talking about, you know, things that are vital to our, you know, the continuation of our lives here in the United States. So in 1993, after it was signed onto in 92 by Bush, Clinton took office in 93 in January, and 6 months later, he created the President's Council on Sustainable Development, and that was made up of 12 cabinet-level secretaries who, you know, and these are high-level secretaries of, you know, energy, transportation, defense, et cetera. And their job, and besides them, there were captains of industry like Ken Lay and Dow. He was with Enron, of course, Dow Chemical. And then you had some of the environmental groups like the Natural Resources Defense Council, Sierra Club, et cetera. They got together and they decided that they needed to figure out a way to implement Agenda 21 in the United States. And what they did was, the first thing they did was they gave a multi-million dollar grant to the American Planning Association because they said we need to change land use in every single city, county, state in the entire United States. Will you write us a document that'll do that? And the American Planning Association did. They came up with Growing Smart, legislative guidebook with model statutes for planning and the management of change. And by the way, change is a jargon term. There are a lot of terms that are sound good to you, and they mean something different to you than what they mean to those who are implementing these plans. So So you'll hear change, you'll hear vibrant conversation, consensus, sustainable,
smart growth,
walkable, bikeable, these things, you know, visioning. You'll hear all that. Those are jargon terms. So, okay, so the APA, the American Planning Association, came up with this document, Growing Smart, which is smart growth. That is the plan to change land use in every single city, county, state in the United States. And by 2002, that book was in every single planning department, every university, every college in the entire United States. And that is the planning revolution that I observed about 10 years ago. That's the beginning of it. The other thing that the President's Council on Sustainable Development did was they said, hey, this stuff might not be too popular with the people of the United States. When they finally realize what we're doing, they might not like it, and they're going to be upset with us. So what do? We're going to have to figure out a way to involve the people of the country and make them think that this was all their idea. So what they did was they came up with a book. It's called Sustainable America, A New Consensus. And, you know, consensus, that means agreement of all parties, right, if you look in the dictionary. But according to this book, the Sustainable America, A New Consensus, a consensus actually is neutralizing the opposition. And what they did in order to neutralize the opposition that they knew was going to come to this plan, they instated, they used a RAND Corporation technique, RAND Corporation.
Right.
That they came up with it in the 1960s. It's a mind control technique, and it's called the Delphi technique. And the way that they use it is they take large groups of people, citizens, they bring you into a plan, they bring you into a meeting, like some sort of a government meeting. You might be invited to go to your Visioning 2040 meeting or your regional downtown plan meeting, and they will Delphi you there. And that's where you are. Basically, these meetings are designed to bring you to a predetermined outcome where there's nothing that you say in that meeting that's going to make a change in the plan that they have. But they want you to think that the plan is being crafted by you right then and that they are interested in hearing what your point of view is. But that's a lie. It's all an illusion. You're there for window dressing to give the illusion that the community has bought in to the plan.
I've often wondered if those were also when they took your, you know, you write down on the little slip of paper your questions and things like that,
mm-hmm.
was how they filtered out the troublemakers or the people that people that had objections, and so they when they had their next meetings, then they already knew how to work around those questions.
That's exactly right, and that's a very astute observation. That's exactly what they do. They use those meetings as well to identify dissenters. And to also, they get better each time they do these meetings at Delphi-ing you because they listen to what your dissent is. They don't allow dissent. No dissent is allowed. What they do is they listen to what you say. They tell you that they're planning to change the plan according to what you want, but then they take your ideas and they throw them in the trash. But they do pay attention to the individuals who are speaking out against whatever their plan is, and they neutralize the opposition. That's exactly what they do. They will find, you know, either they will do it through neighborhood associations, they will do it through, and I know this sounds crazy. The plan is crazy. I'm not at all crazy. I've experienced all of this firsthand and seen
it. Me too.
And so have many people. So, I've been all over the United States from Washington to Florida to from Maine to California, and this is, you know, it's the same plan everywhere.
Right.
And it is implemented the same way. So this is, basically this is government by unelected boards and commissions. So you'll find that you have, you know, these boards and commissions which you can't do anything about. You can't unelect them because they weren't elected in the first place. And they actually speak for you. So, you'll find your neighborhood association might join, you know, your particular neighborhood association, which may or may not be run by people who actually have been put in positions of power over the neighborhood. You might find, as I did, with my neighborhood association that the president of it was, in fact, her job was she was the director of communications and advocacy for the Lung Association, which has a wing, an arm, that implements, that advocates for, lobbies for smart growth at the Capitol. That was her job. She was being paid to run the neighborhood association here. And, you know, these are things that sound really unbelievable, but this is really happening now in our country. We have lost control, and right down to our neighborhood associations, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, right down to a thing that you would think nobody would particularly care about. But the reason that they take control of neighborhood associations is that they, your government wants you to think that you are actually having a voice in being governed. But you do not have a voice. You are being manipulated. The point of Agenda 21 is to inventory and control all people, all means of production, and all resources in the world. And that is what is in, they're in the process of doing right now.
And much of that, and that's down to ourselves as well. We do.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. That's right. Because, and, you know, you'll find that, okay, people say to me, well, nobody's moving me out of my rural area. You know, I live in my, I'm out there, you know, I live out there, and I've got, you know, my, I'm off the grid, and I've got my water source, and, you know, nobody's bothering me out there. I'm cool. And I say, well, here I live in a rural county where we have almost 1,400 miles of rural county roads. And our county supervisors have announced that they will only be paving 150 miles of those county roads in the future. They intend to pulverize, to gravel, the other 1,200 and whatever miles of roads. And you think you're, you know, that's going to affect you if you can't get to your property, if you can't bring your goods to market, if you don't have your postal service out there, if you don't have your schools out there, if you don't have control of your water, if your water well is being monitored, if you lose control of your ability to do anything on your property, if you're zoned or general planned to a point where you can't use your land, you're not going to be living out there anymore. You're going to be moving to the city. And when you're in the city, you're going to be living in smart growth, which is ground floor retail, built right to the edge of the sidewalk, 2 to 3 stories of residential above or more, depending on where you live, with an alley access behind with parking for one car or less per unit. That is smart growth. And it's designed, supposedly, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions because you are going to be not needing a car because there's going to be transportation options for you, like high-speed rail, which is designed to fail, and or, you know, a bus system, which they're not funding buses as much as they were because they don't want a successful transportation system. So this is a way of monitoring, controlling you, and that is a part of Agenda 21 as well.
Well, you know, one of the things, the best picture that I've run across is some of those old non-talk movies, and that where you saw like New York City, and there was people everywhere, and it was just crowded to the nth degree. And or you look at some of these foreign cities that are done in the same manner. That is not unlike what is in the plans, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really the goal. And you know, I mean, you might say that the planners for this are kind of in love with the urban areas of, you know, Paris or, you know, or maybe New York City. And, you know, but I don't know where you live, but a lot of people live in rural areas. And you will see smart growth imposed on rural areas as well, where you'll see, you know, small towns in America, which are designed so that, you know, they have to develop smart growth in those towns or they will not get transportation dollars. Now, I kind of want to go into how that works.
Go ahead.
Because that's really
yes.
important.
Yes.
Okay, so, great. This is fun. So, you know, this is, I mean, I'm saying it's fun. It's fun because I get an opportunity to explain how this works. It is not fun to think about what the reality of this is.
Right.
And I think, you know, when you're hearing this, if you are hearing it for the first time, it's important not to get overwhelmed, because we are fighting this all over the United States, and we are going to win. All we need to do is get the awareness level up. So when you feel that you're educated on this, turn to your neighbor and help your neighbor understand what this is about, because it's very important that we fight this. So the way it works is that transportation departments all over the United States, departments of transportation, are engaged in a process where they are using transportation dollars to fund housing. Now, that's the first time that that's ever happened. So instead of using your transportation dollars to build roads or something like that, instead they're going to be used to build smart growth. And the justification for this is that there is an expectation of a huge increase in population in the United States by 2050. Now, they're expecting another 130 million people in the United States by 2050. Now, I don't know about you, but I happen to be a baby boomer, and I am past childbearing age, and so are a lot of us. So the question is, where is this huge number of people going to come from? Most of us had, at the most, two kids, and a lot of us didn't have any kids, and our population is, in fact, leveling off and expected to drop. So, but that doesn't fit in with the Agenda 21 model. The Agenda 21 model says that our population in the United States is about to grow by 30% or more, 35 to 40%. And where are all these people going to live? Well, they have to live in smart growth, because if they live out in the rural areas or they live in the suburban areas like most of us do, they will be creating too many greenhouse gas emissions. And so the idea is that in order to prepare for all of these people who are coming, we need to use our transportation dollars to bring people into the centers of cities so that they can actually move around without a vehicle. And if we do that, then we can avert sure disaster in the country, because all of those people are going to be emitting way too many greenhouse gases if we don't prepare living situations for them so that they can be in the inner cities. The reality, though, is that what happens with that planning, that's metropolitan planning organizations, and there's a metropolitan planning organization, of course, in every single state, many of them in every state. There are 18 of them in California. And what they do is they actually govern by unelected board. So they're not elected. Those people who are sitting on the regional planning boards are not elected. They are elected officials, but they're not elected to that board. You can't do anything about having an influence on those boards and commissions. So what they're doing is they're determining what city gets the transportation money so that they can build those houses. And cities that do not go along with these plans do not get transportation dollars. And we're talking about 25-year plans. So this is a lot of money. And this is state and federal money. The other thing that's important to know is that we have 50 states, right? And we're governed, you know, under the, you know, local city, county, state, and federal. So we have legal and physical boundaries, geographic boundaries. But these regional plans, these regional planning organizations break those boundaries. And in fact, they break the county boundary, they break the city boundary, they overlap and go into the counties and they cross state lines. So they actually disrupt our government. And not only that, we have 50 states, but there are 11 mega regions in the United States. They are taking over the role of the state. So what you have is you've got like a mega region, for instance, for Washington, which is called Cascadia. This is in existence right now. I'm not making this up. Cascadia is the mega region for Washington State, part of Oregon, part of Northern California, and part of Canada. The one in Southern California, the mega region in Southern California, includes part of Mexico. So these are breaking the boundaries of our nation. The plan is globalization and a destruction of our national boundaries and our ability to govern ourselves. There's nothing more serious than this.
Okay, now this was brought about also in Europe, right?
That's right. That's the EU.
Right. And so ultimately, those people did not agree to go into the EU. They did the same system to put them into the EU that they're doing here without
That's right.
our go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're right.
Yeah. And so ultimately, if you listen carefully to the language that is taking place around us and on our media, you're hearing the global terms. You're hearing instead of the United States Navy, it's America's Navy. You're hearing the terminology done in such a way that we're accepting it and we're going along with their plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. People are not recognizing, in fact, like, you know, as I was mentioning, there's jargon, you know, which means something to you, and it means something entirely different to the people who are using that jargon. Like, for instance, change. Okay, now change, you know, when we think of change, we think of maybe something good. You know, it's like, oh, we're gonna improve, we're gonna change, we're gonna make something better. But change really is a jargon term, and what it means is transformation and destruction of your existing system. That is what change means to the people who are running your government now.
Okay, and I'm speaking with Rosa Corey, and we're talking about Agenda 21 and sustainable development, and listening to the other side of the coin as to why maybe we should be looking at this a little closer, because it's being passed off as something that we really want, and I'm wondering how many of us really would if we had all the information. So, Rosa?
Yeah. That's good. You know, I don't know how your listeners are distributed, but all around the United States right now, you'll find plans that are regional plans. They're called, for instance, One Valley, One Vision, One Bay Area, Four States, One Vision, Six Counties, One Vision, Our Florida. You know, they're different names, but they're all regional plans. They're all the same plan, in fact. And in fact, if you look at these plans, and I'm sure that there's one right there wherever it is that you are, you're
yes,
listening.
There is.
It's Your Town 2020, Your Town 2050, Your Town 2035, Vision Your Town. Okay, that's what they're called. They're all the same plan. Okay, and in fact, they're the same plan. I was looking worldwide. I looked at the Hanoi Regional Center plan recently, and that is the same plan as One Bay Area, the plan here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Same plan. Different street names, but it's the same plan. These are all the same all across the United States and into the world. And what they all do is they move populations into concentrated city centers. They restrict your mobility. They monitor, control, and surveil you. And, you know, they reduce services to the suburban areas. In fact, this is what the collapse of your economy did, is it's creating a situation where you are having to, you know, you're losing services out in the rural and suburban areas. And there's a migration of people into the cities. And this ties in with the National Defense Authorization Act and the USA Patriot Act, which are designed to, in fact, redefine the battlefield as being domestic. They identify us as potential enemy combatants. They allow warrantless searches and domestic surveillance. And part of Agenda 21, you think you're out there in the country and you've got nothing to worry about, but Agenda 21 with the Wildlands Project is getting people out of rural areas, blocking access to the, you know, to wilderness roads and resources, and shifting land ownership so that you will no longer own land out there in the rural areas. And when you find that your county tax base is reduced because much of the land is, you know, goes off the tax rolls and is now owned by county, state, or federal, and they don't pay taxes, right? Well, who's going to pay the service? Who's going to pay the taxes so that you have services out there? So more and more of those service taxes devolve onto the few people who still own private property out there, and they can't, you know, you'll find people losing their property tax liens. So this is the plan.
Well, you were going to get into finishing how they were implementing these things in these the cities and stuff when you had your development areas and how they work through the towns. And so if you want to continue where you were going with that. So.
Yeah, that's great. You know, California, I don't know if people are aware of this, but California just Governor Jerry Brown and the legislature just ended redevelopment, which is tax increment financing. That's ended here, but they've, of course, got some other plans up their sleeves. But it's still very much alive in other states, all across the United States. And the way that works is that, you know, you pay your property taxes, and but let's just say you're in an area that now is declared blighted, and they can, you know, declare pretty much any area blighted. In fact, Beverly Hills, you know, which is a very upscale, expensive area, part of Beverly Hills was declared blighted because people had leaves on their tennis courts. So they hire these hitmen who can find blight anywhere. And the point of that is that then basically think about this. Your property taxes, you'll continue to pay your property taxes every year just like you always do. But instead of those property taxes going to pay police and fire, going to pay for schools, going to pay for your county parks and your roads and stuff, for the next 30 to 40 years, the amount of money that goes into all of those things gets frozen at like today's number. And then for the next 30 to 40 years, any increase in taxes goes to the redevelopment agency. It doesn't go to pay police and fire, doesn't go to pay your pensions, doesn't go to pay for your parks, doesn't go to pay for your streetlights and all the rest of the services that you expect from your city and county. It doesn't go there. And so that's part of the reason why so many cities and counties are finding that they are completely, you know, going bankrupt, because they have diverted huge amounts of property tax away from their general funds and into an unelected board, the redevelopment agency, which is then restricted in what they can spend that money on. And they use that. What they do is they indebt themselves immediately to bond brokers. So this might sound boring. I hope it doesn't.
It's key because it's going on.
This
right
is the way it works.
Now. Right, right.
You know, this is how. So if they take your transportation dollars through. You know, through legislative means, right? There's a bill passed in your state that says that transportation and land use have to be together now. Like you have to, you know, reduce your greenhouse gas emissions and create, high-speed rail. So that money goes. You don't have that, to pay for your roads. So then there's no maintenance on tons of bridges and roads. And then the other thing is that, they take your property taxes, so there's no maintenance for your city services or your county services. It's fully designed this way to bankrupt us and destroy our independence. That is the plan.
Okay, now, when they change these highways to calling them corridors, and it's more than just highways, do you know what that purpose is for?
Well, if you're talking about land use, you're talking about not turning highways to corridors, but to turning, you know, actual land areas to linkages or corridors so that animals can get from one habitat to the other. For instance, in the United States, there's a plan right now. It's in my book. I don't have it right here, but I think it's wildlands.org, and it's in my book.
Well, and there's also a whole presentation called Taking Liberty that Michael...
Yes, there is, but right. This is, I don't think that they have this particular thing in that presentation, and that is the actual, he may have that in there, but it's the
map?
The corridors that go from Mexico all the way up into Alaska. They've got one that's called Yellowstone to Yukon, another corridor that goes across the northern border of the United States with Canada and goes down the East Coast. And these are lands that have been identified as being corridors and linkages for wild animals. So wild animals are being brought back. Wild carnivores are being brought back into the wild. First of all, your government doesn't own that land. This is government. It's not just your government. Your government is governing with it's a public-private partnership. Your government is in partnership with non-governmental organizations. And these are unelected boards. They are getting huge grants from your government. You are paying for non-governmental organizations, nonprofits, to actually make rules and regulations and laws and policies that impact you and your ability to live right now.
Okay,
so these corridors are identified all across the United States, and they're huge. Some of them are, you know, we're talking 500 miles wide. Well, your government doesn't own that land. So what do? They identify it as being a habitat, as being a streamside threshold area, as being a biotic resource area, as being an area that cannot be built on, cannot be used, cannot be farmed, and where you do not, in fact, have the ability to use your land. And they do that with these are regulatory takings. You don't get paid for that. So this is happening everywhere in the United States.
Okay, now there's some maps, and I believe it's on the Nature Conservancy site, that overlay each other that show that many of these things cross over on top of each other, and it does end up taking a very sizable portion of the country. Now, when you say the corridors are primarily for wildlife, but you know, if you've noticed when you're driving down the highway, they will state that there's a safety corridor ahead. You will see that term is being utilized in many other manners, and that's I just thought maybe you had was more familiar with that, but I do know that they use corridor for a lot of the roads down in, like the one coming from.
Well, corridor is a term that's used in transportation.
Okay.
You know, I don't want anyone to think that I don't support. I do support regional. You know, there are a lot of situations where you want regional planning, like for instance in transportation, because you don't want your road to end at the end of your county or your city or your state. You want to be able to, you know, there are certain situations where regional planning is important.
But it made it prime for doing it through transportation, I see, implementing the region thing.
That's right.
Okay.
That's exactly right. And if you go to America2050.org, you'll find the mega regions that I was talking about. There are 11 mega regions in the United States. And high-speed rail is a number one building block of the mega regions, and it is designed to fail. There's just not enough money for this, and the plan is not to move you around. The plan is to bankrupt your city and county and state to a point where you have lost your sovereignty.
Okay, and what I'm finding that are you familiar with these enterprise zones and how they take these funds that are public monies and then they set them aside and then use them so they're kind of separated out and the people lose control of the money even though they've been told it's for them, and now it becomes a corporate entity that doesn't necessarily have to serve the needs of the people any longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. There are enterprise zones all over. They're, you know, all over the United States in different areas. And, you know, initially they were designed so that so that people who own businesses would be given incentives to actually create businesses in these areas. There are areas where you might have a sort of a tax holiday. You might actually be given money for each person that you hire in the area. But as usual, these are public-private partnerships. This is the way that your government is no longer, you know, I mean, I'm not saying the government was like, you know, squeaky clean and that now it's corrupt, this is some new thing. What's new about it is that it's actually become part of government to have public-private partnerships going on, which ultimately, Well, let's say the most the scariest public-private partnership is prisons. Those are now private. A lot of private prisons out there. And when you have a public-private partnership with a prison, you need prisoners to make a profit. And if you have, if you want to see more prisoners, then you want to make more things crimes. And you want to have sentences last longer. So that is part of this as well, is to strengthen, part of Agenda 21 is to strengthen non-governmental organizations, private nonprofits, or for-profit organizations. And you'll find this is the year of the nonprofit. The 20th anniversary of Agenda 21 is this year. It's they're going back to Rio de Janeiro. It's January 4th, 5th, and 6th, I believe. And so you'll see that the plan is to strengthen these unelected boards and commissions. And this is a very dangerous thing that's happening because you have no control and there is no transparency.
Okay, no.
So money is funneled to private organizations that then make rules and laws in conjunction with your government that benefit themselves and hurt you.
Right, and so ultimately you find that these non-governmental organizations, they have kind of partnered with many of your commercial interests have been encouraged, corporations have been encouraged to partner with these non-governmental organizations because the non-governmental organizations can do things that the commercial organizations might not be able to get away with and can feed each other.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, this is why we're morphing to a corporatocracy is what's happening. And the corporations are funding. That's why I'm saying, the environmental movement has been hijacked because there's a huge amount of money that big corporations are paying into the green groups, which have, which look good. You have been conditioned to think of them as being, sort of sacrosanct, above suspicion, great. Like, for instance, the League of Women Voters, which isn't, I'm not talking about them as a corporation, but I thought, to me, the idea of the League of Women Voters, anything being wrong with that, is like thinking about, your grandma out on a corner with lipstick waiting to pick somebody up, But I was shocked with my own experience with the League of Women Voters to find that they are not, that they were not nonpartisan, that they did have an agenda, that they are, in fact, really tied in, as are many groups, with United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development, and that they are pushing it. And this is what's really stunning. It's almost like, Invasion of the Body Snatchers or something, where you look at groups that you normally, I am a left liberal Democrat, and supported many, many of these groups before I found out, what their connections were. And it's been a tremendous disappointment to me and shock, but, that does not stop me from getting the truth.
Well, a lot of times you find the clues. I mean, sometimes you have to go to their webs, individual corporations' websites and whatever to find some of the clues that you're talking about that tie them in with some of these organizations. But in one of your videos, you were mentioning that the USA, there was a UN International USA. And so there you find these heritage areas being interspersed throughout the country. And when you start trying to find the ideology of these heritage areas, which I didn't get a lot of information out of our own elected senator and the like, but it looks to me like it's UN-oriented, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are, when you have areas in the United States that are identified by the United Nations as being, they're identified as being World Heritage Sites, and we are required to maintain them in a certain way, and in fact, basically lose control of them, the restrictions on them, on our use, and the way that we maintain them, is an indication, along with many other things, that we are transitioning from United States law to international law. And this is based on communitarian law. The concept of communitarianism says that the individual's rights need to be balanced with the rights of the community. And in this case, we're talking about the global community. So when you think of your rights under the United States Constitution, you're guaranteed rights that you were born with. They can't be taken away from you by a government or given to you by a government. You were born with them. Those are your unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But those are considered to be selfish under communitarian law, and the rights of the community in which, you know, the global community, the world community, are considered to be far more important and carry far more weight than the rights of an individual. So this is a threat to us as Americans, because when you look at a great example in the United States of communitarian law is the 2005 Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court decision, Kelo versus New London, Connecticut, which was where Suzette Kelo lost her house to Pfizer Corporation, which said that they were, you know, they had a plan for her neighborhood. They wanted to build a plant. And they said, you know, to the city of New London, Connecticut, we want you to use eminent domain and take these properties and then give them to us, you know, because we're going to make more money for your city than these little houses are making for you now. And this went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the people lost. The people of the United States lost under that decision, because we were told that now public use, you're under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, you're entitled to just compensation for an eminent domain taking for public use. But this the 2005 Supreme Court decision changed the definition of public use to basically mean anything that any government said it was. And that's when, you know, we lost our rights. Primarily, you know, this was a really big watershed moment for the United States.
Well, let me say this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, and my guest this evening is Rosa Corey, and we are talking about Agenda 21, and I wanted to get into a little bit of the implementation of how they do this on these low-income housing, I mean, because what they did with that decision is that pretty much made everybody's land is fair game now, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Except I presume the Supreme Court justices aren't in any danger of losing their houses. But yeah, that's right. It basically says that, you know, if your government wants to take your property under eminent domain, that you know, anything that is for the public good, you know, is for the common good or the public good. Makes it, you know, so that it's okay, and that's pretty much whatever the government says it is.
Okay, so if you have a low-income housing project coming in, then, you know, your house may be a perfectly viable place and should mm-hmm. be quite livable, but if they decide that, you know, you fit into this area, then your property's in jeopardy, just like it back in the day when they were building highways.
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of that is in redevelopment areas, and, you know, because part of a redevelopment project says that 20% of the money has to be used for low-income housing. Low-income housing is a huge boondoggle. In fact, it's you know, it has created a glut of housing all across the United States, and it's part of why we had a tremendous crash in our housing, because a lot of that land, a lot of those developments were subsidized with your property tax dollars, and remain either vacant or are falling apart or are, you know, actually filled with people who are now in need of low-income housing. But, you know, we have plans all across the country for people to get vouchers, you know, Section 8 vouchers. If you're poor, you can go to the government and say, hey, I need a hand with my rent, and get a voucher, and then you can go and live anywhere that a landlord will let you move in, and, you know, you probably have to pay a little more than whatever the rent, whatever the government pays for your rent. And, you know, you're free to move anywhere. But this is entirely different. Low-income housing, a 100% low-income housing project does not pay property tax.
Wow.
So when you see a low-income housing project that is paid for with your property tax dollars and uses your city services like police and fire and schools and does not pay property tax, It's not actually paying for those services, but using them. So this is a tremendous drain on your economy. And Agenda 21 is a global plan, but it's implemented locally. That's where we fight it, is local, because that is where it's implemented. It's in, you know, it's insidious. Sustainable development sounds good, but it's used to take your rights away from you and to shame you and embarrass you if you actually have the nerve to call it into question.
And so has there been a lot of opposition in your area, and are they having any kind of effect, or do you just kind of feel like, you know, at this point in time, until you get more numbers before it's really going to topple this?
No, you can do a lot with just a few people. You don't have to have a lot of people to make a difference. And that's one of the things I talk about in my book. My book's called Behind the Green Mask, UN Agenda 21, and you can get it on Amazon. There's 20 pages in the back of that book, and it's a short book. There's 20 pages on what you can do to fight this, and there are, all the things are easy. And it's all very doable. You don't need many people to go in to your city or your county and when they're having their visioning meeting and anti-Delphi one of their meetings. We're doing this all over the San Francisco Bay Area, the 9 counties of the Bay Area, as well as people are doing this all over the United States right now. And, you know, basically what you need to do is go into these meetings with your flyers, and I have flyers for everyone. They're on our website, which is democratsagainstunagenda21.com. Make those flyers up and get them out to people, because that's what you're doing, is helping people get educated and understand what is happening. And then you go to those visioning meetings and you call them out. You identify who the collaborators are with United Nations Agenda 21. You expose this. You help your community, your citizens of your town or your city or your county understand what's happening. And then you call a halt to it.
Well, you know, one of the things that you brought up in one of the videos that was on YouTube, and it might have been Behind the Green Mask, you were mentioning that ICLEI, which I'd only been heard reference to cities, there may be having counties that are ICLEI counties.
Oh, yeah. That's mm-hmm. right. There are many, many counties that are ICLEI members. And actually, you're in Colorado. Let me just tell you. Hang on here. Okay, well, I'll just run this for you. Arvada, Aspen, Breckenridge, Carbondale, Commerce City, Denver, Durango, Fort Collins, Golden, Gunnison County, La Plata County, Loveland, Manitou Springs, San Miguel County, and I guess that's it for Colorado. But, okay, so what is ICLEI? ICLEI is an implementation arm. ICLEI is initials. It's ICLEI, and it stands for International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives. And it's an international group. It was created before Agenda 21, a couple years before Agenda 21, with the sole purpose of implementing United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development worldwide. And they say that they represent 600 million people worldwide, including people all over the United States. But most people in the U.S. have never heard of this group. It is solely created to implement Agenda 21, and it does it through through climate adaptation software. And those cities and counties that I read off from Colorado are members. They pay dues to ICLEI, and they are part of ICLEI. And ICLEI is a non-governmental organization made up of elected officials, non-governmental organizations, and corporations. And it is designed to monitor, control your energy use and restrict your energy use. And this is having a tremendous impact on us all across the country. You know, when Obama was running for office, this is a nonpartisan issue, by the way. When Obama was running for office, he committed the United States to an 80% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions 80% below 1990 levels by the year 2050. Now, 80% below 1990 levels, just think about how much energy you might have used in 1990. Now, drop that by 80%. I went and I looked at a chart to find out what that would look like, what the emissions were in 1990, and taking 80% off, what that would look like. It takes us back to 1934. And, in fact, it's actually below 1984 because there are more people now than there were in 1934. It takes us back probably to the 1880s. When you're looking at a reduction in your energy usage of more than 80% below 1990 levels, you're looking at a tremendous impact on industry and on your ability to be an independent, sovereign nation.
So this ties into the smart growth and some of the way the pricing structure has been being implemented through the power companies and the like. And so, and my feeling is that, you know, you see this 500 kilowatt hour break off right now where, you know, that's where they give you the better rates. Well, when I hit that 500 kilowatt, stay under that, I am not running much of anything in the household of one.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, that's what you're going to see. You know, for people who object to smart meters, for whatever reason, I'll tell you, even if you don't look at whatever might be potential health issues, which I don't discuss that because I don't have any proof for that, and that I'm only interested in things I can prove. I can prove that smart meters are designed to be shut off remotely. These are meters on your water, on your gas, and on your electricity, and they can be shut off without anyone coming onto your property at any time of the day or night. And there are new appliances that are coming that will be, in fact, rolled out this year that are designed to have a chip in them, a microchip in them, which communicates with your smart meter, and they can be shut off or have their power reduced to them at any time. So when you're talking about, you're not paranoid when they really are doing these things. So, you know, when you're talking about a country that would, actually create the National Defense Authorization Act and identify us as potential enemy combatants and allow warrantless searches and domestic surveillance, when you have a potential to shut off someone's lights and power and water at any time of the day or night, you have a tremendous amount of control over your population. And that's what Agenda 21 Sustainable Development is. It's control, inventory, and control of all water. Think about that. All the water in the nation is being identified right now. And control. And that means that's restrictions, that's well monitoring, that's control of your energy use. And, you know, you think at 500 kilowatts or whatever that's difficult. How about when they reduce it further? How about when they raise the cost while creating a situation where you have to conserve more and more until you're actually unable to use your appliances? Because remember, appliances are unsustainable.
Okay. And so what is it that, I mean, you get into your the video, and I imagine I'm sure you get into it in your book, about how this country has been brought down economically and that it wasn't by accident what's been going on with the banking and the mortgages and the like, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I really wish I was wrong about this. Unfortunately, I'm not. So this is the way that it was designed. This is neo-feudalism. This is, you are designed, you know, the plan is to bankrupt you, to cripple you financially, to make you nervous and afraid and panicky and worried all the time about your money, about whether you're going to have a place to live and something to eat. Because a population that is impoverished is way more malleable, they're more controllable. You can promise food to someone and they will be willing to do something that maybe they wouldn't have been willing to do unless they were hungry. And what we're seeing with the collapse of our economy, you know, in fact, our economy, actually, this was an engineered collapse because you saw that, Fannie Mae was not being regulated. They were told by the Clinton administration in 1999 to loosen credit, which they did, and then people got into property they could not afford, and then the credit was tightened. And so people who had businesses lost them. This is kind of a signature of Agenda 21, that in fact the idea of the plan was such a good one. How could you be against home ownership? It sounds like such a great thing. How can you be against clean air and clean water and public transportation and affordable housing and protecting the beauty of the environment? The idea is good, but the execution by design is disastrous to us. And that is exactly what has happened. We have been used. We have been manipulated, and the plan is to cripple us. These crises that we've seen, the stock market crash, the housing crash, the energy cost spike, these are all engineered in accordance with Agenda 21 so that we can, you know, we can have this tremendous transfer of wealth from the lower and middle classes to the extreme wealthy, the people who are extremely wealthy. Talk about the 99 and 1%. I mean, this has really been designed, engineered, to destroy our ability to take care of ourselves and to actually transfer the ability to govern and the ability to survive financially out of our hands and into global control. And regionalization is an interim step on that plan.
Well, you know, one of the things that these third world countries, this is what the elites prefer. This is the kind of government they like. And that's what we're being brought to.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's right. It's more manageable. Hey, you know, it's excuse me if somebody's a Republican and doesn't like hearing this, but, and I said it's not a Republican-Democrat thing, but, you know, when Bush said, and he was joking maybe, he said, things would be a lot easier. If we had a dictatorship, as long as I was the dictator, well, you know, that's whatever joke that might have been or not. The truth is, of course, it's a lot easier to manage your people when you're Chinese, you know, and you're running your country as a dictatorship, or you're Putin or something. You know, what we have here is the creation of a totalitarian state, and Americans have. First of all, our educational system is so poor now, deliberately. We have outcome-based education, which is designed to train us like dogs rather than teach us. So with an educational system that's designed to create people who are unable to think clearly, and plus, drugging people, diagnosing people with mental illness and drugging them so they're not able to think clearly, then you have situations where you're able to manage and control a population through a totalitarian and fascist program. And that's exactly what Agenda 21 is. It's government by corporation. That is fascism. And one of the elements of totalitarian, we have the same elements of totalitarianism being created right here, right now, in the United States, as have been created in any and every other totalitarian state in the face of the earth.
Do you not recognize some Sal Alinsky methods when they get into these neighborhoods and set up these community leaders? Are you familiar with that
process? I am. I think. Here's the problem with, at some stages of our history, you know, we have gone through a period of time. We went through a period in the 1880s, or turn of the century, in the 1900s, when, you know, the workers were being exploited and taken advantage of. And there was a need for labor unions and for, mm-hmm. you know, people to assert themselves and to, you know, not be taken advantage of by the extreme wealthy. And I think Sal Alinsky came out of that era of community organizing, which was a good thing at that time because people needed to, you know, to feel that they were self-determining, and this was part of, America trying to create itself as, you know, trying to establish some kind of a self-governing situation with people who are poor and needy.
Right.
But what happened is that these techniques for doing community organizing have been used now against, you know, rather than in order to raise up people who are in need. They're being used as techniques like the Delphi technique to control populations, to shame and embarrass anyone who has the nerve to stand up and say something that's dissenting. The striation of our population so that with diversity training, I happen to be gay, as a matter of fact, you know, and I'm glad that I can get a job and not have to worry about being, you know, somebody outing me or something like that. And that's great. But what we're experiencing now is this, is eventually contributing to the total destruction of our unity as a people, because rather than encouraging us to find, you know, what it is that makes us special in our, you know, own way, what it's doing is it's the plan is actually to disempower people, to make it so that unless you go along to get along, you are going to be marginalized. You will be attacked. You will be shamed and embarrassed if you have the nerve to speak out. And this is what happened with, you know, the Saul Alinsky, with the techniques of, you know, community organizing techniques, is that people are, you know, third world people around the world and people in our own country who are considered disenfranchised are being empowered, but that word empowered is actually not meaning the same thing. It's a jargon term. In fact, what it's being, people are being used as
that's
battering rams.
Right, and then they're playing them off each other. And you find so much during these elections that they take the marginalized populations and they go after them time and time again. Instead of even moving on to new aspects, they go back to the old ones and maybe add to it. But it gets to the point, if we don't recognize those techniques, because they did work, they're going to keep doing it over and over again. I mean, we're being flim-flammed, and when we finally stand up and start saying, I don't want to be taken advantage of anymore, but it's as though it's a victim-abuser situation, the way the government is treating us, and we just, you know, keep taking it and keep taking it, and they're going to keep giving it to us as long as we keep taking it.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. It is, you know, a victim abuser thing, you know, and it's just like any anyone who's ever been victimized, and probably everyone has been, from, you know, at least as a child or whatever, you know, you've been a victim of some bully or other at one point in your life, and you understand that it's not what they say, it's what they do.
Right.
It's not the rhetoric of whatever the plan is. It's what the behavior is, what the action is that's impacting you. And, you know, if you look at... if you look at 1984, you get a really good sense of, and I don't, you know, I don't want people to think I'm being alarmist. I'm actually not being alarmist. I'm merely a reporter.
You're also
of what's
a realist.
Actually happening.
I mean,
that's
this
right.
This is real.
What's really going on. I, you know, I'd love to be making this stuff up. It'd be, you know, kind of a cool movie. But the fact is that, in, for instance, in your schools right now, there's a book being taught to third grade kids called Rethinking Mathematics, which is actually designed to teach sustainable development. And what it teaches is that 1 + 1 equals whatever you think it should. It does teach you mathematics. And this is, you know, you think people, you know, you try and offer a job to somebody now and they barely can, you know, write. This is because your school system has been destroyed by design. And part of what's, you know, and see, you know, you find that people are so ignorant that they don't recognize what, you know, what it looks like to have a totalitarian state. So something we haven't even talked about is, you know, of course, well, there's so many things, but one thing, you know, I mean, there's so much stuff.
They have the tentacles go far and wide on this.
It's true, and that's why I wrote that book, because... You know, I think the book is, it's a short book, it's really succinct, far more than I am when I'm talking, and it really lays all of it out very clearly, because, and I made it a short book because I know a lot of people don't really like to spend a lot of time reading, but it clearly identifies what to look for in your local community, in your town, in your city, in your county, and what it looks like, what Agenda 21 looks like, because it's not called Agenda 21. It doesn't come, like I say, with flashing lights and labels. It's many, many different elements of it are all throughout your town. So it's not that we're not talking about what's going to come. We're talking about what is there already, right now, in your town. I don't care how remote you are. This is affecting you right now.
Okay, when you come into, like, international building codes, I mean, yeah, they sell mm-hmm. them to us as, yeah, let's, you know, let's make these cross the board so everybody has the same codes, but that hasn't been implemented and soon will be, if it hasn't been, is the fines that go along with these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is right. And, you know, I'm so glad you brought that up because really, you know, I touched on a little bit with public-private partnerships in prisons, but this is something that, you know, that you're seeing now is that, well, these things are for your own good. That's communitarianism. This is all for your own good. But what it does is it criminalizes you. There are so many different elements of this plan that criminalize you. And, you know, I'm not saying if you go and get the book, Agenda 21, and read it, like I said, it's 300 pages and 40 chapters, and but the way that it's being implemented in the United States is, for instance, in, let's say, the National Center for Bullying Prevention, which is, when I was speaking in Dallas, I got the newspaper. I always get the paper wherever I'm speaking, and I look at it. You know, it doesn't matter what day it is, it's always got full. It's full of Agenda 21 stuff.
Right.
So this one was the Dallas Morning News, and it was about kids, you know, in grade school, like kindergarten through 12, and about national bullying prevention. And they said this was about kids getting bullied in schools, and there's this National Bullying Prevention Center. And they said the real national change will come, the real national change in bullying will come with a federal law. A federal law about bullying. Now, nobody likes being bullied, and I don't think it's a good thing. But when you're talking about criminalizing children who are doing something stupid, this is a real problem because we will have criminal records as children into our young adulthood. And when you start criminalizing your population and when you start making more rules and more laws, then the chances that you will be breaking those rules is way greater, and your vulnerability goes way up, and then you are more controllable. Because if I tell you that I'm going to jail you, unless maybe you report on
what your neighbor's
doing. Yeah, hey, you said it. That's right, that's some real institutionalized bullying right there.
Well, you know, one of the things that I realize is taking place when you have that kind of what's happening is that you'll find that the general population is now going to have to compete with those that are getting fined and being put in institutionalized one way or the other, whether they go through the mental institutions or they go through the penal institutions. But one way or the other, they become a labor force that the local people sometimes have to compete against, and it may be the equivalent of what they have as slave labor in other countries.
Love it that you brought that up. That is great because, you know, when you're in jail and you're making like $34 a month and you're putting together whatever it is that they're doing, you know, I've got that, you know, that is definitely, you know, could be looked at as competition, and especially when you've got private prisons that are, you know, making soccer balls for some company or something or other, and you know, you're competing out there on the open market with people who basically have their food and shelter paid for and are working, you know, they're required to work and they're getting paid nothing. One thing that people don't know about and should know about, and I swear I'm not making this one up, is asset-based community development. Asset. You are the asset. Asset-based community development is a plan that is underway. It was developed at Northwestern University in Chicago both Barack Obama and Michelle Obama were trained in it, and in fact, Michelle Obama is on the faculty. Asset-based community development is a plan to actually basically force you. They call it mandatory volunteering.
Oh, I love that one.
Isn't that great?
Yes.
Mandatory volunteering, last time I thought about that, that sounds like slavery to me. That's mandatory volunteering, and basically what they do is they go out to cities and towns, and they give this questionnaire, the 11-page questionnaire. Your church member might come out and talk to you, or somebody in some group you're in will come and question you with this questionnaire. Makes the census look like peanuts. And they identify everything about you, your hopes, your dreams, how you make money, what you've ever done for money, what you know how to do, and I'm talking about in total detail. And then they GPS that with your physical location so that they have a map, which actually, if they click on your house, it comes up with who's in the house with you, everybody's questionnaire, what, you know, everything about you. And then this is used to create a work pool for mandatory volunteering.
Wow.
And mandatory volunteering, who do you volunteer for mandatorily? Some government agency? No. It's usually a nonprofit. And these are go-along-to-get-along nonprofits or nonprofits that are actually in the business of making policy for your government. And if you're like a student in high school and you want to get a good grade point average, you're going to go and do your mandatory volunteering. If you've been busted for something, some minor offense, you will do. You may do community service. This is what this is mandatory volunteering.
Okay, because what I'm actually telling my grandkids, you know, to be looking at this kind of thing is the new labor type way to get into the labor market. That colleges are going to be too expensive. They put them into debt too heavily, so that they're behind the eight ball, because a lot of the jobs won't be there that they think they're going into, mm-hmm. or they're going to be underpaid, and they won't be able to compete with the guys that didn't go. And so then you have you're going to be implementing a feudal system out there, to where you're going to have a master and apprentice type situation if they don't go into the youth corps or other means.
That's it. You got it. That's exactly right.
So there's so much going on out there, and I realize that it's just it can be quite a task to try to grasp
it all. It's heavy. It's very heavy. But you know, I really encourage people not to be overwhelmed by this, because you know, there is a way. We are going to beat it. We can do it. It is happening now all over the United States, that people, it's like we've been under a spell or something, and everybody is waking up now. And it's happening, you know, this kind of awareness is like mushrooming across the United States. But one thing I want to say is the American Planning Association is aware of the fact that people across the country are aware of this,
right.
and waking up and going down to their planning department, going down to their city council meeting, going to their county supervisor meeting, going to those regional plan meetings and saying, you know, we're not going for this anymore. You can't pull the wool over our eyes anymore. Well, the American Planning Association just put on a 12-week communications boot camp for planners all across the United States and told them to change their jargon, because we know what Agenda 21 is. We know what smart growth is all about. And so they've advised them to completely change their terms so that we, you know, they're hiding. They're trying to hide. But it's too late. We have caught them, and we are not letting go of this. The planning departments all across the United States have been indoctrinated with this, and we want planners to know there should be Nuremberg laws for planners. Planners should not be taking people's private property rights without compensating them. And if planners want to stand up to the planning department and say that they refuse to implement these plans, we will stand with them. We will stand behind them and support them and help them in defending their jobs, because this is a bloodless coup. It's an administrative coup d'etat, and it's being implemented through regulations. and it is definitely worldwide.
Right.
So,
and one of the things that I'm noticing on our on locally is that they're implementing these infrastructure projects mm-hmm. one after another, and even though some of them are very environmentally friendly, or you know, nature, you know, bike paths and
bike paths,
things along that lines. You know, these things all start adding up as to who's going to end up paying for them. Because when they end up going through bonds. Well, where did the term bondage come from?
You know. Yeah, that's funny. You know, I just got an email recently. I get about 1,000 emails a day,
oh, wow.
And I got an email from somebody in Ohio. Who was telling me that she lives in a little town, 5,000 people, and they're about to spend $700,000 on a bike path that's a mile
and
a half long.
We're the same size, and it's going to be twice as expensive.
Well, see that? Okay, now what this is, okay, so they say this doesn't cost you anything. This is coming from your Department of Transportation as, you know, providing most of the funds, and then some matching funds, and then some grants. Well, really, that money is your money. It's your tax money, and it's being used for a project that is, you know, either there's very little demand. Your bike coalitions are the shock troops for Agenda 21. They will beat the drum for smart growth. So they're down there saying that they need bike paths, and that your transportation dollars should be going for bicycle paths when, you know, for huge costs on these bike paths and tremendous amount of money on bicycle bridges, bike paths, bicycle boulevards. And this is all designed because bicycles don't emit carbon dioxide. I guess if you breathe real hard, they do. But, you know, it's about getting you to not be able to use a private vehicle anymore. And when you think about it, you know, you're in an area where there's snow, where it snows. You know, if you're on your bicycle 12 months a year, there's a lot of time where you're really not going to be going anywhere. And if you're in a car, you can put a lot of stuff inside that car without anyone knowing what's in that car with you. But if you're on a bicycle, you don't have too much privacy on that bike. You also don't have too much range on that bicycle. And I don't care if you're one of those guys who rides your bike 100 miles a day. So what? I'm not talking about you. And even if I was, try doing it 1,000 miles. Try riding your bicycle as far as you could drive your car. You can't do it. You can't carry as much. You can't carry as many people. The rhetoric about bicycles are friendlier, you know, I'm telling you, if you get four people in a car, you've got a real friendly experience there. How many people do you have on a bicycle? So the rhetoric, it's a game to manipulate you, to use the bicycle coalitions as the shock troops to pressure your local government to put in bike paths, bike boulevards, and bicycle bridges that are tremendously expensive and will not support your economy. This is part of Agenda 21.
And so ultimately you find that they put in these big, that you find these groups going around the country selling these big infrastructure projects, anywhere from schools to the sewage plants to water projects, you name it, and you start implementing that many projects on small areas. Yet I mean, some of these things, you could put kids through Harvard at the price of what you break that down in dollar-wise. So,
mm-hmm.
so
that's right.
So,
yeah. With high-speed rail, especially, a lot of that, light rail and high-speed rail, if you, I was up in Washington State, and someone was talking about the cost of high-speed rail and how you could buy private vehicles for, you could buy like a brand new car every year for every single person who was projected to use that high-speed rail for the cost of that rail. It has to be heavily subsidized. And the real truth is that a lot of those rail lines are designed for freight. And a lot of them are designed, these are crony projects that are designed to use your property tax and your income tax and your transportation tax dollars to benefit a few crony industries so that they don't have to pay.
And that's the truth. I've seen that over again. But one of the things that this Agenda 21 makes it sound like it's relatively new, but this kind of, what they plan to do for this country and what's coming to culminating right now has been on the books for a long time, much, much longer than Agenda 21. It's just Agenda 21 is the vehicle they're using.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, there are people who say, well, smart growth is nothing new. We've had, you know, stacked housing with retail on the ground floor for, you know, a long time, since the 1800s. What's the big deal? And I say smart growth is not just a building style. It is an ideology. And that's what makes this different. This is the imposition of an ideology using your tax dollars to subsidize it so that, in fact, you are, it's a social engineering plan that is using your money to create a situation where you do not have a choice and you will be moved out of the rural and suburban areas into the center of cities, where cities are far dirtier than being out in the rural areas. You know, your quality of your air, your water, you need huge trunk lines for that sewer and the water lines, and your transportation options are going to be limited if you want to be able to leave that city. This is all social engineering, and it has a veneer of green, but this is a lie.
Well, I've always termed the green is the green for them in the form of dollars and the sustainability for them, who, so it sustains their resources, and that we are out of the picture because asset-based is humans as well. And if we're not healthy and viable and producing, then we will be marginalized.
Absolutely. And that, you know, that there's huge money in green. We're talking about carbon offsets. The you know, Chicago Stock Exchange, the Mercantile Exchange, is actually the model for the carbon credit trading schemes, the exploitation of the third world, manipulation of the farmers. Look at the issue with food sheds. You know, you've got. You know, people who are concerned, now if you're listening to this and you're thinking that I'm some, you know, extreme right-wing, you know, person, I'm not. I'm a left liberal, been a Democrat since 1974. This is not a left-right issue, and it's not a partisan issue. It's an American issue. One of the things that that you're concerned about, many of us are concerned about, is where our food comes from. And you know, we want good quality food that's hopefully locally grown, or, you know, if not, then, you know, we want to make sure that our food is not sprayed with anything that we don't want to eat or whatever. But when you talk about these new transit villages, see, where you live is not really going to be a city. It's going to be a transit village. You're going to be living in transit-oriented development in a transit village, where you may or may not have a vehicle that you can use, a private vehicle, and you'll be it'll be determined how many people can live in that transit village by how much food can be grown around it in a ring. There will be a ring of about 100 miles, and they'll calculate the number of calories that can be grown in that ring of land around that town, that so-called town. It's actually a transit village. And then there will be restrictions on how many people can live in that town based on the amount of calories that can be grown there. And if you look at, oh, and by the way, livestock is unsustainable. So if you look, that went over real big in Texas when I was talking in Texas. So if you doubt this, I want you to know that there's total, absolute, solid source documentation for every single thing that I'm talking about.
Why don't you give your website?
I'm sorry. Yeah, great. Please go to my website. I'm really hoping that you do. A lot of people have gone there, many hundreds of thousands of people. It's Democrats Against UN Agenda 21.com. And you have to put the UN in there because somebody has just bought the website Democrats Against Agenda 21, some sneaky rat, and I can't get that website away from this person. But it's Democrats Against UN Agenda 21.com. Go there. I've got lots of good source information. There's videos up. lots of videos. If you also, if you put my name into YouTube, there's a lot of videos there. My last name is spelled K-O-I-R-E. My first name is Rosa. I'm Rosa Corey. So if you go to my website, you can take a look at a lot of this information. I've got a blog there. Now, if you want source information for food sheds and transit villages, go to Cornell University and Food Sheds. Put that in your search engine, Cornell University Food Sheds. And you'll get to, in my book I have the URL, but I can't remember what it is. If you go there, you're going to find what I'm talking about. They calculate, based on the number of calories a person needs every day, how many people can live in a specific transit village, depending on how much land is around it. Now, all they have to do if they want to increase the population is reduce the amount of calories that you get every day. Think about that.
Okay, now I ran across the one Food Sheds and Footprints for Cornell University, or Mapping Food Sheds. Is that what you are talking about? Or
yes,
Okay.
That's right.
Because there's several
of them.
Yeah, go
take a look at that. And another one, you want to see a great website. This is really interesting. Go to, put in Natural Defense. Natural Defense. No, that's wrong. What is it? NRDC. Natural Resources Defense. I can tell I'm tired.
Council?
Yeah, that's it. I have to look at my own book. I can never remember these things. It's Natural Resources Defense Council, isn't it?
That's it.
Okay. .org. And put that in with Picturing Smart Growth.
Okay.
If you go there, Picturing Smart Growth, there's a you look at that page, and it has a photograph of a town in the middle of, you know, some place in the country in the United States, and it's some little intersection. And you watch that morph before your very eyes into a smart growth area, because on either side of the street, buildings shoot up on either side of the street. And this is smart growth. And they don't tell you who owns those buildings, who owns that land, because, you know, not everybody can afford to build to the smart growth model. It's very expensive to build that, because the ground floor retail is usually vacant. And they, you know, it's very, very expensive to construct. So they need subsidies because it doesn't pencil out. There's no demand for it. So a lot of this, there is no demand for it, but your tax dollars pay for it.
Okay.
And talk about an unlevel playing field. But besides that, it's creating the hardscape for your future.
Okay, now, are they using that model in China?
Yes, they are.
Okay, now,
Instead of that, I mean, here we're talking about, you want to see, if you know, back in the old days, National Geographic magazine, of course, who didn't love that magazine, right? You just couldn't wait to get your National Geographic, and it was so much fun, and you'd see those elephants and whatever. Cool. Now, you want to see the picture of Agenda 21, you look at your National Geographic magazine. A couple of months ago, I think it was the December issue, they did an article on cities of the world, and how cities were the answer to greenhouse gas emission problems. And, of course, they have a photograph of, I think, Singapore, where you can't see across the street. I used to live in Hong Kong. These are places where there's a tremendous density of people, and these buildings are like 40 stories tall. They're concrete blocks. And this is considered to be the sustainable model.
Well, I was just watching a movie about the town in China that back in the 70s that was demolished by an earthquake, and how it affected the people, you know, and you have them in those dense little cities, you know, those buildings just, you know, crushed. I forgot how many hundreds of thousands of people that were, you know, died in that particular earthquake. When you get a place like San Francisco or these places where, you know, New York City, they're all on fault lines, you know. Mm-hmm. So or Tokyo, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So these packing, stack and pack cities, you know, may not be. Well, I already know that I don't want to be in one. But I don't think we're going to get the choice on that.
Right. Yeah, I'm not, you know, you want to go live there, go live there. I don't care. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with, you know, I don't want to live like that, but some people do. I'm sure if you gave people in New York City the opportunity to live in a house on Fifth Avenue, they'd be very happy to, but they can't afford it, and they live in, you know, their big fancy apartment. But when you're talking about a rural area where people are accustomed to living on some acreage and they have some animals and they're out there on their, you know, in their house, this is, you know, the way a lot of people prefer to live. But the issue is that you will not have the option. And when you're, you know, when you're designing a future design style that is basically like a prison where, you know, if I tell you that I'm going to provide you with food and, you know, place to live and your clothing, and the only catch is that you're going to be in jail, you're probably not going to be too crazy about the idea. But this is, you know, the goal is to bring the first world countries into social equity with the third world countries. And what that means is to slightly bring up the third world, but to really decrease the standard of living for the first world. And, you know, I don't like that ranking of first, second, third, et cetera, but I'm talking about if you've got a house and you have more room in there than you need, you are living, you know, your lifestyle is not sustainable. If you've got a private vehicle, if you have appliances, air conditioning, if you, you talk about dams. Dams are being destroyed all across the United States, supposedly so that salmon can spawn more easily. But the truth is that they create clean energy. They are hydroelectric plants, and they control flood. They control floodwaters, and they're used as reservoirs. And this is something that does not tie in with Agenda 21 sustainable development plans to make you more dependent and less able to live out of the cities.
Well, and this is, again, goes back to the rhetoric part, because now when you have environmental, ecological animal or whatever, where they're shutting down the breadbasket of the country and getting rid of the water that is able to feed and produce that kind of food that is fed not only this country but been shipped out outside of mm-hmm. this country, you know, it kind of flies in the face of what is sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's really a key thing is that, you know, people, of course, we all, you know, as I said before, we all think that we kind of understand what sustainable means. But, you know, when you understand what the goal of sustainable development is, which is to, you know, to inventory and control all resources, both human and natural, and all means of production in the world. And when you have the huge banks all connected with this, and you have all the major corporations connected with this, and you have the governments, you know, people say to me, why is it that a government would want to lose its sovereignty? You know, what is the point of having globalism? Why would you want to lose nationalism? Well, you know, we have global markets now. We have, you know, in fact, this is part of the reason why we're so, you know, have experienced this incredible austerity that we're having now in the United States. You see, Greece, this is headed your way. You think it's bad now. It is going to get worse. And the reason that we need to, you know, to stand up to this is because we are witnessing, we're standing in the experience of seeing our nation destroyed around us. And we do need to, you know, you've got, I don't know what you're watching on TV, but it's time to turn it off. Because this is way more important than that, and it's part of the drug that you're being given to think that there's nothing that you can do and there's nothing that you should do, and in fact that is not true. And like I said, I'm not trying to sell my book either. My book is, you know, it's I think it's $17 on Amazon, and it's pretty close to what it cost me to produce this book. The information in there is excellent, and if you don't want to buy that, you can actually get it on Kindle too. It's called Behind the Green Mask, UN Agenda 21. You can also get a lot of that information on my website. What you can do, it's called the page is What Can I Do? And there's 20 pages of what you can do, including printing out flyers, going to your city council meeting, going to your planning commission meetings, talking about this, holding your own meetings, informational meetings. You can show lots of videos. I have lots of speeches on YouTube. There are, you can make videos yourself of walking around in your town, asking people if they know that your city is a member of ICLEI. Can they define sustainable development? Do they know what it is? Lots of ideas on how, you know, what to do. Kicking ICLEI out of your town. That's the International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives. Kicking them out of your city, out of your county. Fighting back. Taking your power, taking control, you know, take your media opportunities that come your way, comment on all the newspaper blogs, on newspaper articles that come out, write your own newsletter, get your own blog going, inform people of this information. It is out there, and this is true, and we do need, it's all hands on deck. There's no heroes. Nobody's going to come and rescue you. We have to do this together.
And, you know, we're not prophetic. I mean, this is the reason why we're saying and doing what we're doing is because this has been in the plans and written about by the people that have produced this, that are producing it. And these guys pass it on generations. This goes way back. But
yeah.
It you know, environmental movement didn't start even in this last century, and they had an agenda behind utilizing it to get about this global government.
Mm-hmm. You know what? One of the things I say is that, I mean, this sounds really crazy, but you know, there's some truth to this, that the, you know, Nazis didn't really lose World War II, that the eugenics program is still alive and well. That, you know, restrictions on your ability to move freely and speak freely, dissent, the national identity card, the radio frequency chips in your passport and about to be in your driver's license, if not already, and many, many other ways of controlling, restricting, and monitoring you, including, you know, smart growth is posed to you as an environmental answer to a question, to a solution to a problem that may or may not exist, and, you know, and you're finding that it's having a tremendous impact on your life, and, you know, for instance, when you're seeing that there's a prediction that, you know, that our population is about to go up by 40% by the year 2050. Well, a lot of us who are listening to this are going to be dead before 2050. We're not going to have any way of checking to see if these guys were right or not. The fact is that they put their dates out there far enough in the future so that we can't test them. And so that, in fact, you're going to be accused of not caring about the planet, of, you know, you'll be shamed for questioning sustainable development, excuse me, and, you know, and being told that you don't care, you know, about what happens to the world if you ask these questions. This is a corporatocracy. It is a global transfer of wealth and land ownership and sovereignty, both personal sovereignty as well as the sovereignty of nations, to a group, a small group of that are governing.
Okay, now one of the things that you did bring up, and before we come to a close this evening, but I wanted to bring up that, you know, yes, there's plenty of documentation out there, but one of the things you brought up in one of your videos was the fact that they're using computer models. And these guys are sitting around and they're fudging a lot of the numbers. And and we're accepting these statistics when I've heard some discussions on just the population of the planet has been messed with so many times, they don't have a clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know. It's the same thing with predictions on climate change. There are so many different elements, but obviously whatever suits this plan is going to be pushed as fact. And, you know, so you're going to be told that, you know, obviously that the population of how do you say your town, Salida?
Uh-huh.
you know, is probably, what do you have, like 5,000 or less people there?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's going to go up to 250,000. You know, it's ridiculous. But these are, you know, things, first of all, what we need to do, all of us, is recognize that we're having government by staff, government by planners. And your elected officials are often ignorant of this. Some of them are not. Some of them are way on board with it. People who are serving on the regional transportation commissions, they are aware, a lot of them, of this plan.
You have your council of governments, your
right, council
your governors
of government,
and your international governor groups, your mayor groups, you know.
So. That's right. The NACO, which is National Association of Counties, League of Cities, the International City and County Management Association, all these groups. There are many, many, many non-governmental organizations that are, you know, pushing this, and they give grants. And they give challenge grants, and they pay for trainings. They indoctrinate your elected officials, and they tell them to go along to get along, to not create dissension. And this is what happens. Something that's really good to do is just support your elected officials who are speaking out about this, who are challenging this. They need your support, and there are more and more and more of them. Every day I'm going all across the United States and speaking, and I'm finding, you know, more and more people are coming up to me and saying, hey, Rosa, I have your book. Some one of my constituents gave it to me, and it really clarified this for me, and I understand now. We want to help our elected officials understand what they are participating in so that they can refuse to participate in the destruction of our country.
Yeah, so when... I mean, I think it was at Khrushchev that said that they will get us to agree, you know, agree, and it will be taken down from the inside. This is how they're doing it.
Yeah. I know. Well, it's Soviets. I mean, that, you know, I don't use the term communism because it isn't really communism, but it is government by boards and commissions, which are Soviets. That's the term in the Soviet Union. But really what you have is a combination of all of these factors that sort of creates a perfect storm and where you have people who are poorly educated, who are drugged with actual drugs or with, you know, minor brainless entertainment, and then shamed and embarrassed if they actually try and do their civic duty and question these plans. And, you know, and then you have elected officials who are either cronies or they're, you know, don't really know what's going on. And then you have planners who are indoctrinated all the way through school with sustainable development, smart growth principles. And so,
throw in a little bit of corruption in there, too. Because
there's plenty of corruption. Oh, yeah, there's a huge amount of corruption. The trash companies, the water companies, the fire districts, the water districts. I mean, we're talking about major, major corruption here. And, you know, so there's nothing more exciting than waking up out of your stupor and jumping into this and standing shoulder to shoulder with people all across the United States and saying, we will not allow our country to be taken over. Not on our watch. Is this what we're going to pass on to our children and our grandchildren? Is this the life that we want? Don't want this.
And there's people across the world that are actually waiting for us to do it because they know we were the model of a government entity that they all looked up to, and now we're letting it crumble beneath us. And it is us that they hope will stand up because we still have some ability to do so.
Mm-hmm. I know. You know, it's a very painful thing, especially if you're on the left, especially if you're really tied in with green and with, you know, what you think sustainability is, to recognize that you have been duped and manipulated and you're being used. And it's very painful to come to that realization. But you know what? You've got to move through that and just get on it and recognize this is real. I don't care if it's being, you know, yes, it's being embraced by, you know, a wide range of political people. And, you know, I don't let that stop me. I told you I'm gay. I'm a left liberal Democrat. And I work shoulder to shoulder with people who are on the other end of the spectrum from me, who probably, you know, don't like a lot of aspects of my life. I don't care. This is way more important than any of that.
Right.
And we have to work together. Do not allow your fellow Americans to be divided from you, because that's the way that we lose on this issue. And this is not an issue. This is our lives. We're not talking about an issue where you can just go to sleep now after you heard this, me talking. You're part of the resistance now. If you think that I'm telling the truth, and I know you know that I am, you better know that you're going to be on this right here with me. I'm not any more special than anybody else. We're all doing this together. And you know what, Melody? I want to tell you how much I appreciate it, that you are using airtime for this, because you'll never hear this on the mainstream media. This is not being broadcast on any mainstream media.
Right.
So this is important.
Right, and it is, I mean, this is about control and austerity, what they're promising to the Greeks. That's going to be us, because
that's exactly right.
And we need to realize that it's about our ability to not just live in meager means. They don't even want us in meager means. So, you know, it's now the time to stand up while we got it, because, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law, as far as I'm concerned.
We still have, you know, it's like we're wearing our clothes in tatters now, but we still have something to pull together around us. And we need to all recognize together that we still have a voice, and there are a lot more of us than there are of, you know, those who are doing this to us. And, you know, the thing is, there's going to be rhetoric. This is filled with pratfalls. This is filled with a jargon that is going to be used to manipulate you. People have said that I am, that this is a myth that I'm perpetrating on people. That's what the American Planning Association says. They've tried to get me to lose my job. That's one of the reasons I'm retiring. It's because I don't like putting my employer in a position where they're being pressured to fire me.
Right.
And, you know, so the thing is, this is a very important thing that we're talking about, and everybody needs to recognize that totalitarianism doesn't come with a label. This is what it looks like.
Yes, yes.
This is exactly what it looks like. And you need to call a halt to it. Where were you in 1938? You weren't born? Well, now you get your chance. This
right.
is it. Are you going to go along to get along, or are you going to be one of those people who stands up and says no? This is your opportunity now.
Right. This is time to activate. And so, Rosa, I want to thank you for coming on the program, and I really appreciate all that you're doing, because I know that you're spending many, many hours trying to get this information out, and it takes all of us to try to get this out there so that we can educate the public.
Yes, and I thank you so much, and I want to encourage everyone to know that we are winning this, and we are going to win this because we have to. So let's do it together.
Okay, well, again, thank you, Rosa. And good night.
Good night.
Okay, bye.